Good morning. Welcome to Fellowship Greenville. If this is your first time here, we want to welcome you. As I said, we're glad you're here. And if you attend here on a regular basis, we would want you to know that most weeks we are studying our way through whole books of the Bible. And currently we're in a study through the book of Acts. But as we begin a new year, we're taking a short break from our Acts study, and we're doing a short four-week kind of a back-to-basics kind of study that we're calling Check Your Settings, System Update 2016, and check your settings. If you own a computer or a smartphone or a tablet of any kind, you know that you constantly have to check your settings to make sure that everything is working properly. If your Wi-Fi is not working, you got to check your settings. If you're in an airplane, the pilot comes over, the loudspeaker says, put your phone in airplane mode, you got to go to your settings, put it in airplane mode. If you don't want notifications from every app you download, or you decide later on that you don't want notifications, then you go into your settings and you check off the notification. You're always going into your settings, because in today's high-tech world, you constantly have to check your settings to keep things working properly, because if your settings aren't right, then nothing works right. Now, last week, as we begin this new series, we saw how our spiritual life works in a very similar way. The Apostle Paul tells us in Colossians chapter 3 that as Christians, we need to set our mind on things above. And we said the Greek word for mind includes both our thought life and our emotional life, and we need to set and reset our minds on eternal things rather than live in the default settings of the earthly things that draw our hearts away from God and away from the life that Jesus died to make possible for us. Last week we looked at the first setting. It was called read. Switch that on, and we talked about reading the Word and the storyline reading plan that is on the new app. Reading the Word, listening to the Word, abiding in God's Word. Crucial, essential to experiencing the new life and freedom we have in Christ. Now, this morning, we're going to go into our settings and check a setting called serve. Because, you see, if we're going to set our minds and hearts on eternal things, you need to realize there are two eternal things. Anybody know what the two eternal things are? Okay, this is interesting. 40 years ago, people would know this. But anyway, times are a-changing. The two eternal things are the Word of God and people. So we set our minds and hearts on God's Word, because it lasts forever, not one jot or tittle will pass away. And we set our minds on people, because people are going to live forever somewhere. So we specifically set our minds on serving people. Now, Paul talks about this in Philippians chapter 2, verses 3 and 4, just before he starts talking about the example of Jesus' servanthood. He says, do nothing from selfish ambition or conceit, but in humility count others as more significant than yourselves. Let each of you look not only to his own interests, but also to the interests of others. So based on what Paul says here, when the Bible talks about serving others like Jesus serves us, one of the things that it means is that we learn to put the interests of others above our own, put the interests of others above our own. Now, to help you see how important it is for us to set our hearts on serving people and putting their interest above our own, I want you to take your Bible and turn to Mark chapter 6, your Bible, your smartphone, your tablet, your app. Find your way to Mark chapter 6, verse 30, and we're going to look at the miraculous feeding of the 5,000, and this story is so important. It shows up in all four Gospels. So Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, they all saw a lesson in this story that was essential to understanding what it means to follow Jesus and serve Jesus by serving others. So now, interestingly enough, too, this story was a story that early Christians told around the communion table, as they blessed and they broke and passed out the bread of the Lord's Supper, which we're going to do later on this morning. So this is fitting. Now, the message this morning is going to have a main point and a sub-point. But here's the deal. The sub-point is going to feel like the main point, because we're going to spend a long time on it, And because it's a very powerful idea. So actually, the subpoint only serves to set up the main point. You understand what I'm saying? Of course you don't. You won't until you get to the end of the message. So just stay with me. It'll all come together at the end. I promise you. Okay. Mark chapter 6, we'll begin reading in verse 30. The apostles returned to Jesus and told him all they had done and taught. And he said, come away by yourselves to a desolate place and rest a while. For many were coming and going, and they had no time to even eat. And they went away in a boat to a desolate place by themselves. Now many saw them going and recognized them, and they ran there on foot from all the towns, and they got there ahead of them. And when Jesus went ashore, he saw the great crowd, and he had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd, and he began to teach them many things. Now, I don't know about you, but when I first saw this, I thought, wow, I've never thought of teaching ministry as compassion ministry. But as far as Jesus is concerned, the most compassionate thing he can do for them is to teach them. I mean, I always think about teaching the Bible as trying to explain the Bible clearly enough so our people can understand it and apply it to their life. And, of course, it certainly is that. And it's not just teaching up here. Like, thank you if you serve in any small group ministry, I mean, where you're teaching others and you're involved in any kind of teaching. It's kind of a neat thing to think about what you're doing with those people that you teach is you are showing God's compassion on them by helping them understand the truth of God. Because when people can understand and apply the Bible to their lives, then people who are hurting find comfort. People who are hopeless find hope. People who are weighed down by guilt find forgiveness, and people wrestling with doubt find faith, and some people who are worried about the uncertainty of the future find rest in God's sovereignty. People lying awake at night trying to make difficult decisions find guidance. People with questions find answers. People struggling with some kind of bondage to some kind of sin find freedom. So when you look at the results of teaching ministry, it really is exercising compassion on people when you teach them God's word in a way that they can apply to their life. Okay, I'm going to read through the rest of the passage, verse 35. And when it grew late, his disciples came to him and said, this is a desolate place, and the hour is now late. Send them away to buy low or Whole Foods before it closes. Okay, just checking to see if you're with me. That's in the original Greek. But send them away to the surrounding countryside and villages so they can buy themselves something to eat. But he answered them, you give them something to eat. And they said, what are you talking about? Shall we go and buy 200 denarii worth of bread and give it to them to eat? In other words, we don't have 8 months of a man's wage. We don't have enough. And so Jesus said, how much do you have? How many loaves do you have? Go and see. And when they had found out, they came back to him and they said, well, we found 5 loaves and 2 fish. And then he commanded them all to sit down in groups on the green grass. So they sat down in groups by hundreds and fifties. And taking the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, he looked up into heaven and said a blessing and broke the loaves and gave it to the disciples to set before the people. Gave it to the disciples to set before the people. And he divided the 2 fish among them all, and they all ate and they were all satisfied. And they took up 12 basketfuls of what? Say it. Broken pieces or fragments and of fish. And those who ate the loaves were 5,000 men. Now, that 5,000 men, that doesn't count the women and children in the crowd. And so if you're here today and you're a woman or a child, I'm sure you'd want to be counted in the number. So commentators tell us that the crowd was more like 15,000. 15,000. Now, the story's not over. It's just getting started. This story goes on, verse 45, immediately he made his disciples get in a boat and go before him to the other side to Bethsaida, and while he dismissed the crowd. After he had taken leave of them, he went up on the mountain to pray. But when evening came, the boat was out on the sea, and he was alone on the land. And he saw that they were making headway painfully, for the wind was against them. And about the fourth watch of the night, he came to them walking on the sea. He meant to pass them by, but when they saw him walking on the sea, they thought it was a ghost, and they cried out, and they were terrified. But immediately he spoke to them and said, take heart. Remember, last week we talked about taking heart. Take heart, it's me, don't be afraid. And he got in the boat, the wind ceased, and they were utterly astounded. All right, here's the whole ball game. This is how it all ties together, verse 52. They were astounded because they didn't understand the lesson of the loaves. They didn't understand about the loaves. There was a lesson in the loaves, and they missed it. Okay, the context tells us that Jesus had sent the disciples out on a short-term mission trip, and they went out preaching the gospel and casting out demons and healing the sick, and they come back, and they're all very excited about how God has used them to do things that they could never do in their own power. They've come back, and they're very excited, and verse 31 says they also have come back, and they're tired, and they're hungry. So Jesus says, let's get away from the crowds and find a place to rest. So they cross the lake to find a place to rest, but what they actually find is another place where God continues to bring more and more people to hear the gospel. And obviously, if God is bringing you more and more people who are like sheep without a shepherd, you can't ignore it. You just can't ignore it. So they wanted to rest, but God kept bringing them more and more people. Now, by the way, that's what God is doing here, because every week we have between 10 and 30 new people walking through our doors for the first time. I've told you this before, but haven't said it in a while, but in the five-mile radius around this church, it's the fastest growing area of Greenville. So there are lots of people that are moving here from all over the country, and they're coming here from all kinds of different religious backgrounds, no religious background, and many of them are hearing the gospel for the first time, and many of them are making Fellowship Greenville their church home. And that's why we've run out of space, and that's why you see a building going up out there, and that's why we ask you to sacrifice your time and your money here, because when God keeps bringing you people to care for and to serve and disciple, you can't ignore it. You can't ignore it, because to ignore it is to ignore God. And so back to the text. So Jesus has compassion on the crowd. He teaches them many things, meaning he was the long-winded preacher and created problems in the parking lot. All right. So, and late in the day, the disciples came to him and they say, verse 36, Jesus, these people are hungry. You need to send them away so they can get something to eat, and we can come back here and pick up tomorrow. Now, there's no mention in the text that anybody in the crowd is starving to death. There's no mention that anybody in the crowd is complaining about being hungry. There's no mention anyone is leaving because the sermon's gone too long and they got to get to Salsaritas before sundown. I mean, verse 31, right? Who's hungry here? Who's hungry? The disciples. Verse 31 said the disciples were hungry because they were so busy they didn't have any time to eat. So whose interest are the disciples most concerned with? Yeah, theirs. Mm-hmm. Like kind of like us sometimes. This is a Philippians 2 moment. Now, Jesus is getting ready to do a great miracle, and not just to play his God card, like Brian Unkin likes to say. No, there's a lesson on serving here that he wants us to see. So Jesus says to his disciples, you give them something to eat. And they say what we would have said. We would say, Lord, there's no way we can feed 15,000 people. We don't have enough money to buy food for all these people. Lord, there's no way we can build a building in this economy. We don't have enough resources. There's no way we can serve all the people you're bringing here. We don't have enough volunteers. There's no way I can give the church. I just don't have any money left over. They're saying, Jesus, we don't have enough to do what you've asked us to do. But you see, when Jesus wants to do something big, meaning to do something beyond your ability, he starts with you're not enough. You're not enough is his more than enough. So verse 38, Jesus asked them, well, what do you have? And what do? They tell him what they don't have, which again is kind of like what we tend to do. And Jesus says, I didn't ask you what you don't have. I ask you what you have. I mean, I'm God for my sake. All right, you got it. All right, I've been working on the timing of that all morning. So I'm God for my sake. I mean, I know what you have and you don't have. I'm God, and I don't need you to run a list for me of all the things that you don't have. I'm trying to get you to see what you do have that I'm going to bless and I'm going to multiply. So the disciples go out in the crowd, and you know the story. They find a kid with 2 sardines and 5 loaves of Ezekiel bread. that you can buy at Whole Foods, which, when you think about it, it comes back with two sardines and five loaves of bread, which is, it makes the whole point of not enough even more comical. But again, your not enough is his more than enough, and your not enough is where impossible happens, and impossible where God starts. So, I mean, think. I mean, that's true, isn't it? Because if, when God tells you to do something that you think is impossible, beyond your ability, if you always had enough, if you always had enough resources, always had enough wisdom, always had all the connections that you needed, if you could do what God called you to do in your own strength, you would never see God show up and do God things. You'd never see God show up and do things that only he can do. So following God into the impossible with our not enough is the main ingredients for a miracle. Now, by the way, do you think in that crowd of 15,000 people, there was only one person who packed the lunch that day? I don't think so. I mean, I think there was a whole lot more than just the one bag of fish and chips in that crowd, but there was only one little boy who was willing to give his lunch, and that was the one thing that Jesus would use to work this miracle. I'm afraid at times too many of us want to hang on to our lunch, because we look around and we say, I can't give, I don't have enough money, I can't serve, I don't have enough time, I just don't have enough, and the little I have won't make any difference. And so, since we don't have enough, and we don't have enough to do everything, we end up not doing anything. I wish we could get our minds around the power of what's happening in this story, because this lesson of servanthood here, I mean, think about it. I ran across this question from a woman in an internet blog, which she talked about this passage. She said, who would have ever thought that a little boy who wasn't even included in the counting of the 5,000 men would provide the ingredients for a miracle that counted so much we're still talking about it today? Two quick points. Number one, sometimes God uses seemingly insignificant people who are willing to serve to do the things that count the most. Sometimes God uses seemingly insignificant people who are willing to serve to do the things that count the most. That's the little boy, because in most people's eyes, he was just insignificant. He's just a little kid, and what he had was certainly insignificant. Now, I'm going to go outside the text into my sanctified imagination, but I'm thinking of how did that boy happen to have a lunch that day? How did he happen to have a lunch that day? Well, I'd say his mother packed his lunch that day, because if you know anything about the culture of that day, the dad certainly didn't pack the lunch. So my question is, to follow up on her question, do you think that mom ever thought that her simple act of service would become a part of a miracle that would go down into eternal recorded history? Point number two, sometimes God uses seemingly insignificant acts of service to accomplish things that changes people's lives. I mean, I hope those of you who are working in the parking lot and those of you who are working behind the scenes and sound and light and tech, and those of you who are serving as greeters or at the information desk or at the cafe team, or you're working as a diaper diva. Did you know we had diaper divas here? It's on the app. Just go under Fellowship Kids and you can sign up to be a diaper diva. So I don't even know what that is, but anyway, I want you to know, I appreciate everything that y'all are doing to serve, because we've got a good culture of service here, and when I drive in, it's so cool to see people working in the parking lot and doing all, greeters and ushers, all serving. But here's the thing, God mixes every act of service together as ingredients for the multiple miracles of life change that go on in this church week after week. Everybody matters. There's no insignificant position. Now, let me also say this. Do you realize that you can serve as simply as this? Like, there are times, not necessarily in the third service, but there are times where you come on Christmas and Easter and Christmas Eve. There are times when it is so packed, and do you realize you could serve and put someone's interest above your own by moving to the middle and leaving the outsides open? I know you don't like to sit right next to somebody, you know, elbow to elbow, when you want to be able to get out. You don't want to sit in the middle of the, but if we put our others' interest above our own, we can leave the outside open, and that way the ushers can help people find a seat who are coming in late. Simple way to serve. Another simple way to serve is if you're healthy, park as far away from the building as you possibly can. Because leave the places up front for our guests, because first-time guests, they don't know their way around here. So it's going to take them more time, because they got to come in, meet a greeter, have that greeter, and especially if they have kids and fellowship kids, they've got to find somebody to take them around to all the classrooms and get their kids in the right place, and hopefully they'll get in here on time. But they won't get in here on time if they have to park in the back of the parking lot. And so simple acts of service like that, where you're putting the interests of others above your own, those things aren't insignificant. Those things count, and they can be ingredients that God mixes in with everything else going on here to change somebody's life. It's true. I'm telling you, it's true. So the mom packs the lunch. The little boy gives his lunch. But I said, the fact is, the lunch isn't enough to feed all those people. But again, impossible is where God starts. So verse 41, Jesus took what was not enough, and he blessed it. He took what was never going to be enough, and he blessed it, which caused me to think of a question, and that is, do you bless your not enough, or do you complain about it? Do you bless your not enough, or do you complain about it? It's real quiet in here. Too convicting. Let's move on. Okay, back up. In verse 39, there's lots of points to the servanthood here. Jesus is orchestrating this whole thing. So Jesus commands the crowd to sit down on the green grass, which is kind of interesting, not the brown grass, but the green grass. And Jesus divides this group of 15,000 people into groups of 100, hundreds and 50s. Now, why would he do that? Because you understand that would take a long time to do that. Take a long time. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26, 27, 28, 30, 31, 32, 33, 34, 35, 36, 37, 38, 39, 40, 41, 42, 43, 44, 45, 46, 47, 48, 49, 50. Okay, well, you back over here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 15,000 of them. So why would he take the time to do that? It's very simple, because the best way to make a big crowd smaller is to divide the crowd into small groups. That's exactly what he's doing. Jesus wants his disciples to see that in order to minister effectively to people, there needs to be structure. There needs to be systems in place to make sure that everyone got what they're needed. Because just imagine, if he didn't do that and send the disciples out to serve, you'd have 15,000 people running to the front while Jesus was trying to break bread and fish and giving them out. I mean, it would have been total chaos, and somebody would have got run over in the stampede. Now, interestingly enough, the disciples, I think, they came to understand the importance of this part of the lesson, because in Acts chapter 6, and you can read that later on, but Acts chapter 6 shows that these apostles put into practice what Jesus taught them right here, as they had to find more effective ways to serve the thousands of people who were under their care as the church got started. And that's what we do here as well. We constantly look for ways to make a big church smaller, and we do that because in almost every facet of our ministry, we tried to divide people up into small groups of every kind, community groups, groups who serve and leading. And when somebody asked me, hey, Charlie, where do you see Fellowship Greenville 5 years from now? For 19 years, I've always answered that question the same way. And I say, 5 years from now, I hope we're doing exactly the same thing we're doing now, just more of it, more effectively. Right now, we are building towards doing more of it, more of it by expanding our facilities to care for and disciple people. We want to do more of what we're doing right now with you, with the people, the new people that God is bringing here. But I want you to know that behind the scenes, we're in a process of restructuring and reorganizing and putting new systems in place to do more ministry more effectively. And even in that, trying to plan, we're operating out of our not enough. Not because we're stupid and we don't necessarily know what to do, but the fact is we're trying to plan for an uncertain future. And so only God knows the future, so we bring our not enough wisdom to God, and we ask him to bless it and to multiply it. And you know something? I'm not worried about how all this is going to work out. I am not worried about it. You know why? Because I look back at how faithful God has been in the past in leading us and guiding us to where we are now, and I remember how God took our not enough in the past and made it more than enough today. We're sitting in yesterday's not enough. You understand that? And I'm trusting him because of how I've seen him work in the past. I'm trusting him to provide all of what we need for the future. Now, that's what's going on in this story. Jesus took what would never be enough. He blessed it and made it more than enough. And that happened as the disciples came to Jesus with their baskets, their empty baskets, and he just kept, miraculously, he kept breaking bread and tearing fish apart. And just think of all the time it would take. I don't know how big the basket is, but, I mean, he's tearing that up and putting them in baskets, and they go out, and they serve the people, and they come back, and he does the same thing. He's doing it with all 12 of them. I mean, this back and forth and back and forth and back and forth, there's a lesson that they're supposed to be learning, that they get what they need from Jesus and pass it on to others. And so they do this over and over and over again. Took a long time until verse 42. They all ate and were satisfied. And when it was all over, verse 43, the disciples gathered up 12 basketfuls of broken pieces. Now, why 12 baskets of fragments? Why? Not because of the 12 tribes of Israel. No, because there's 12 disciples. I mean, 12 baskets for 12 overworked, hungry disciples, which is it's an evidence of Jesus' compassion on those who serve with him. Now, the story isn't over. Oh, no, I'm not even to the main point of my subpoint yet. So Jesus puts them in a boat. That text doesn't say this, but it's implied. When they get in the boat, what do they carry with them? Each of their baskets. Of fragments, okay? Keep that in mind. And they head off to the other side of the lake as Jesus goes up to the mountain to pray. Again, Jesus is orchestrating this whole lesson on serving others because what's coming is a test. A test to see if they learned what he wanted them to learn from the miracle that just happened. So what happens next is a test. Night falls, they're out in the middle of the Sea of Galilee. Storm comes, scary, powerful. Wind and waves, and notice verse 48 says what? That Jesus saw them. So Jesus is watching them making headway painfully, straining at the oars against this wind, which means they're freaking out. Because, well, how long do you suppose Jesus watched them before he walked out to them? Well, do the math. They left the Jesus Serve Up a Miracle Training Center about 6 o'clock in the evening, and Jesus watched them till the fourth watch of the night, which is 3 a.m. So that's 9 hours. They're in the middle of the Sea of Galilee making no headway. 9 hours. They literally think they're dead in the water. Why did Jesus wait so long? Because it's a test. He was putting them back in the same place they were before, back in not enough. This time, it's more risky, more scary, I grant you that. But this time, he puts them in a place of not enough strength to row their way out of the impossible situation they were facing. So he puts them in another impossible situation right on the heels of a previous impossible situation. He's orchestrating the whole thing. It's not chance, not accident. It's on purpose. Now, by the way, I don't know what form of impossible you might be facing this morning. Maybe you're in a spot where your not enough seems to be pointing you towards total failure, or maybe you're in a storm where your not enough is threatening to take you down. But do you see that Jesus is with you in both places? Jesus always sees what you're going through. He sees you in your predicament of not enough, wondering where the resources will come from. He sees you in the storm with your not enough wisdom and strength, and you're wondering if you're going to go down with a ship. He sees you, and if he sees you, that means you're not alone. And if you're in a place like that now, I know sometimes it feels alone. It feels like there's this distance and there's this darkness and this danger between you and Jesus because he's left you in the storm longer than you think he should. But hear me, there's never, ever any distance between you and Jesus because get this, he's right there with you while he's coming to you. I mean, he would say, I'm God for my sake. I mean, look, he's God. He can do both. He's with you while he's coming to you. If he sees you, he's with you. And then he goes out to meet him, but he doesn't go in a boat. Jesus just starts walking on the stuff they think's going to sink him. That's so good. Same's true with us. When you and I are in a storm and we think he's not there or he doesn't care or he's not going to come through for us this time like he did last time, he just walks over everything we think is going to sink us, and he says, take heart, don't be afraid, I got this. And he walks out to them, and the Bible says, verse 48, he was about to pass them by, which is kind of interesting, isn't it? Why would he come out, and he's going to pass them by? Well, he had told them he was going to go to, oh, this is a neat insight I just got. He's going to go to the other side, so he's going to go there, whether they think they're going to get there or not, but Jesus headed there. But the other thing is, you got to invite Jesus into your boat. You got to invite him in. And you know why they didn't invite him in immediately? Because verse 49 says they didn't recognize him. They thought that he was a ghost, and that freaked them out even more. Now, the same Jesus who they were with in the miracle of the feeding of the 5,000 is the same Jesus coming to them in the storm. The problem is he's coming to them in a different form, a different way than he did before. Now, you need to remember that, because the way Jesus worked in your life in the past may not be the same way that he works in your life now or in the future. You got to understand that, because if you don't, then the next time Jesus comes to you in your not enough, which may be scarier than before, but the next time he comes to you and you're not enough, you may not recognize him. You may not even recognize how he's going to deliver you, and it might be different that next time. But you may be afraid, since you don't recognize him, that you're afraid to invite him into the boat with you. Jesus says, take heart. Don't be afraid. It's me. They invite him in. He climbs in the boat. Everything goes calm, and they're totally astounded. Why? Verse 52, because they did not understand the lesson about the loaves. Okay, so what's the lesson of the loaves? Still on the subpoint. Think. Now, Jesus said, give these people something to eat. And even though it was impossible, they came to a point where they believed his word. They took him at his word, and Jesus enabled them to do the impossible, to feed and serve 15,000 people. Then Jesus puts them in a boat. He puts them in a boat carrying the fragments of the previous miracle with them, and he says, cross the lake, go to the other side, I'll meet you there tomorrow. To test, here's the test question for the disciples. In the next impossible situation that Jesus would put them in, where yet again, they would not be able to do what Jesus told them to do in their own strength, the question is, would they trust him or would they freak out? Now, that was the test. And here's the deal. All they had to do was look down at their feet, and in that bag were the fragments of God's past faithfulness. And they could have looked down at those fragments of God's past faithfulness and said, you know what? Jesus said to feed a fit crowd of 15,000 people, we couldn't do that, but he enabled us to do it. He said, go to the other side. We're not going down. We're not sinking here. He told us to go to the other side. So, hey, you know what? Let's just quit rowing. Let's just quit rowing and let's just trust Jesus to get us there. I think he would have been like Iron Man flying out there and pulled them off to the other side. Now, here's the test question for us. When you find yourself in an impossible situation, when you face difficulties and dangers, when you're not enough, will never be enough, will you see the broken pieces of how God has worked in the past and trust him to provide for you in the present? See, that's what this is all about. And the thing is, you're always carrying the broken pieces, the fragments of God's past faithfulness with you into the storms of life, as reminders that the same God who was with you then is the same God that is with you now. You see that? Our problem is we too easily forget what Jesus brought us through then to bring us here now. And so at the first time of trouble or at the first time kind of sign of difficulty, we start trying to row harder and harder, and we wear ourselves out with fear and worry, trying to figure out what we can never figure out with our not enough. We too easily forget that we're carrying the fragments of God's past faithfulness into the storm we face now. Because you see, the same God who got you through then is the same God who'll get you through now. The same God that got you through that is the same God that'll get you through this. But it may be maybe not in exactly the same way, probably not in exactly the same way. In fact, you may not even recognize him at first, because what he's telling you to do now and the place that he has you now may be a lot scarier than it was then. But the lesson of the loaves is this. The same God who was faithful in the not enough of your past is the same God who will be faithful in the not enough of your now. That's the lesson of the loaves. You always carry the broken pieces of God's past faithfulness with you as reminders that you can trust him now. Now, all that was subpoint. That's all subpoint. But it's a pretty good subpoint, wasn't it? Here's the main point that's going to come in form of a question. This is an easy question, I think. If you could go back in time to the day when Jesus and his disciples stood in front of that crowd of 15,000 people, if you could go back in time and you could be in that crowd with Jesus and his disciples, would you want to be standing with Jesus and his disciples, or would you want to be sitting in the crowd? You follow me? If you could go back to the day of that great miracle, would you want to be a part of the miracle in the making, or would you just want to eat some fish and chips and go home? Anybody just want to eat and go home? Okay. All right, here's the hard question. This might hurt. If you would choose to stand with Jesus and his disciples in order to be a part of God doing something big and impossible back then why would any of you choose to come here and sit in the crowd and be fed and just go home? Have you found a place to serve here at Fellowship Greenville? Have you found a place to serve here? Listen, everything we looked at in this passage, the ahas that you might have had, the potential life-changing truths you heard that has the power to set you free from worry and fear and anxiety and confusion, look at this text. These truths were not for people sitting in the crowd. These truths were for the disciples who served with Jesus, serving people. People who serve others are Jesus' target audience in this story, because people who sacrificially give their lives away to serve other people with no expectation of return are the ones who see God work in the ways that I've talked about this morning. Because when you serve with Jesus in serving others, there will be times when you'll be called to do what you cannot do with what you do not have. Meaning, you might be tired, you might be hungry, you might think that what you could contribute is insignificant, but God might call you to serve anyway. He might call you to serve anyway. So I ask you again, have you found a place to serve here? And listen, there are lots and lots and lots of places you can plug in and serve here. And they're all, I'm so excited about the app, because you can go under media and you can go under volunteer to serve, and they're all there. We need people serving everywhere. Now, I hear what some of you are saying. You're saying, but Charlie, there are lots of places to serve outside the church. Why aren't you talking about that too? Well, here's why. Because two times a year, we devote entire worship services to talking about serving outside the walls. And a lot of you do serve outside the walls. And that's part of our ministry. That's the heart of our ministry. We want you to do that. And we talk about serving in the community and serving on short-term mission trips and going on long-term missions. And we talk about serving outside the walls in all kinds of ways. And we are constantly calling you to serve outside the walls in all kinds of ways. I'm not downplaying that, and I appreciate those of you that serve outside the walls, but let me say that this morning I make no apology for inviting you to go into your heart settings and check serve and check serve here. Make no apology for asking to serve here, because if we don't have all the people that we need serving here Sunday after Sunday, week after week, if we grow a bigger crowd, but we don't grow a bigger foundation of servant volunteers, people who serve with a heart that's willing to do whatever it takes to serve wherever they're needed most, if we don't have that, if that base is not growing, then I guarantee you there'll come a time when we're not able to effectively do ministry outside the walls, because we don't have the foundation built inside the walls. Effective ministry outside the walls is built on the foundation of doing more effective ministry in here. And we can only do more effective ministry in here if we set our hearts on putting the interests of others above our own by serving one another right here. Now, here's where I want to put the emphasis this morning, the emphasis for service. I'm asking you to sign up to serve in Fellowship Kids. Now, I know a lot of you are serving in all kinds of other ways in the church. I understand that. But I'm asking you to sign up to work in the children's ministry, those of you who just go do it. Here's two key reasons. One is, this is where you're needed most. We have 150 volunteers serving every Sunday in Fellowship Kids, 150 that do all kinds of things, diaper divers and all that. Now, I'm not going to run a long list. You can go see the list on the Fellowship Greenville app, but I'm not going to run a list, because here's what I would rather see you do. The heart of a true servant is someone who says, just tell me where I'm needed most and I'll serve there. Just put me where you need me most and I'll serve there. So what I'm asking you to do is, after the service is over this morning, to go out in the commons and go out to the Fellowship Kid table and walk up to the table, and whoever's standing there, just say, I'll serve, put me where you need me most. I'll serve, put you where you need me most. And Casey or Missy or whoever's standing there will help get you plugged in. The first reason I'm asking you to do this is because this is one of the places of greatest need. Now, the second reason I'm asking you to do this, I'll put it in a question form. Do you think that the world, that these kids, your grandkids, your nieces, your nephews, your cousins, do you think the world that these kids are growing up in will be more Christian or less Christian than the world we're living in now? I think you know the answer to that. The world our Fellowship Kids will grow up in will be more antagonistic to the faith you and I hold probably than any other time in history. It's getting bad now. It's getting worse and worse now. So we better place a high value, a high priority on teaching and equipping the next generation to carry forward the faith and the mission of Jesus that we believe in so strongly. So I'm calling older students, singles, parents, grandparents. Come on, grandparents. Go out in the commons, go out to the Fellowship Kids table, and just say, put me where you need me most. I promise you, you do that, you'll be part of Jesus' miracles in the making as he draws the hearts of those kids into a personal, growing faith in God. And I'm telling you, serving Jesus by serving others is the best way to learn the lesson of the loaves that we've talked about this morning. It's the best way, it's really the only way to experience the faithfulness of God. Well, you experience the faithfulness of God in ways you'll never experience if you just come and sit in a crowd and you be fed and you go home. The blessing here comes not just to the one who is being served. The great blessing comes to the one who serves. And you can experience that blessing, and you can be a blessing. Now, if we needed any more encouragement to serve others here, we get it from this table right here, because on the night before Jesus died, Jesus gathered his disciples to eat a Passover meal. And that night, the first thing that Jesus did was he took a bowl of water and he took a towel and he washed the dirty feet of his disciples. He put their interest above his own, because nobody else would do that menial work. So Jesus washes their feet, and then he says this. He says, "Do you understand what I've just done? Do you understand what I just have done for you?" He says, "You call me teacher and Lord, and you're right to do so. So if I have served you in this way, I'm leaving you an example that you would serve others in the way that I served you." That's my paraphrase. And he says, "You'll be blessed if you do to others as I have done to you. You'll be blessed if you serve others the way that I have served you."